it's not like you can only write what you know. I've written about characters who are cannibals in my horror stuff, and I'm not a cannibal, and I would never be a cannibal, we hope. You know what I mean? It's my best guess as to what would kind of push someone to that. But it's just like, I found the stuff that's going on in your life works its way into your writing, whether you kind of want it to or not. The more of your life you've lived, the more interesting stuff you can kind of work in there.
Hey, thanks for listening to the Tradecraft Podcast. I'm Alex. I try not to be too precious about the creative process, you know, in so much as it's like, oh, will the muses speak to me today kind of thing. Process has been something that's been super important to me, even probably before I even knew really what it was. And it's gotten me out of a lot of tight jams. I also think the act, when you're doing it and when it's working, is like this magic spell. And then there are certain things which are like the, mixing my metaphors here, like kryptonite to this magic. For me, it's problematic individuals, and they don't have to be involved with whatever I'm working on. It could be another thing. Today, the inevitable, it wasn't even an email. It was a text from another client, and it was a series of texts, and they were just getting more and more, I don't even really know what you're talking about kind of stuff, to a point where I said, hey, let's get on a call. Got on a call. You know, I just looked at my other work and said, well, see you later. I don't know how it works for you, but man, it just, sometimes when you just, I don't know, hey, another metaphor here. It's like Buster Douglas, you know, you're Mike Tyson and you're just knocking everything out. But then this unknown cat comes along and just has your number. Anyway, this week's guest is Rich Dweck. Rich is a one of one, as guests go. And I've had people say, hey, you should have so-and-so on the show. Those are usually recommendations from other guests and friends. And I try to accommodate, still waiting for Alan Moore to email me back one day. A couple of months ago, somebody on Twitter at messaged me and said, you should have Rich on. And someone just, you know, put two and two together and said, if I say to the person whose podcast I listen to, I want them on there, maybe that'll happen. And it did. I was, I realized that's A plus to you. And Rich has a parallel background in that he has been in the advertising business for, you know, 20-ish years. I was super curious to see how someone who lives in that world lives in the comic book world and how they integrate both disciplines. You know, I also like seeing people navigate their way into the industry from a different perspective. You know, Rich didn't go in, I'm going to go work for Marvel or DC. He really had a very smart approach to how he wanted to engage with the business. And he seems to be handling it the way he likes. And I think that's fantastic. Yeah. So this is me with Rich Dweck.
Two back-to-back trips. We went to Colorado and then we went out to Oregon. And I wrote consistently on the Colorado trip. But when we got to Oregon, my wife is like, can you just not write? Can you just hang out? And I'm like,
yeah.
All right. I'll take a zero. Do you struggle with any sort of ego with any of the work?
I don't know. I mean, I think I used to be a lot more like, got to write every day, mm-hmm. you know. But then I just sort of got to the point where I felt like it was doing more harm to me, like mentally mm-hmm. than good. Like, where it was like, I was beating myself up about not hitting a target more than I was like, having the target be like a positive thing
yeah.
or, you know,
yeah.
So for me, I think eventually I was just like, okay, well, I just need to like, it's less about a target of like words or pages or something like that, and more just like I have to like put the time in, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So if it's going to be like an hour or 2 hours or 3 hours or whatever it is, it's like, you know, butt in chair for that amount of time. Mm-hmm. And if we get, you know, 1,000 words out, great. If I get 300 words out, you know,
great.
Not great, but great. But like, you know, okay. Yeah, great. And just to like, you know, just sort of accept that it's not, it's like, doesn't really matter how smooth I would like the process to be.
Yeah.
If, you know, my brain is not agreeing with that. Yeah. And, you know.
Yeah. It's tough because, you know, having been on both sides of the, you know, it just in the comic book world on both sides of that fence, you know, the hours are brutally long when you're penciling, you know, it's just, there's no way around it. It's not an easy, you know, an easy racket, but there's a roadmap, you know, you're looking at a script and you know, if you are hired to do the job, you have the tools available to do it. And while, you know, you start a day off with a blank piece of paper, it's not a blank piece of paper in a sort of existential sense. It is a piece that you just have to execute a complex series of actions to make it come together. And then the times when you're just getting frustrated with yourself as a writer, and I'm not talking writer's block, because I don't kind of believe in that kind of stuff. I think if you do the work, you put yourself in the place and you do the stuff, it happens. It's a performance thing. If you don't level up to the performance that you feel that you are, or you've reached it, you know, I think right now I'm just battling this sort of internal clock that only I set. Nobody's put this external sort of thing saying, hey, we need this by this date. Do it.
You know? Yeah. I was going to say, I think like deadlines actually really help more than hinder when it comes to like, when it comes to writer's block and stuff. It's like, you know, there's kind of like no such thing as writer's block when you have to hand in the script like that day and it's not done or like whatever. Mm-hmm. It's like you have to get it done, you know, barring like emergencies or whatever. But yeah, I think deadlines really help to like kind of sort of help everything kind of click into place, like mentally, to like, you know, get you in the place where like you're going to write. And like, I think like when I don't have a deadline, that's when like, it can like, because you can find like a million excuses like not to write, you know what I mean? Like whether it's like other things you have to do or, you know, or I don't know, oh, maybe I'll just watch TV or like whatever, you know what I mean? Or things like that. It's like, you know, there's like a million things. And then like, I don't really believe in writer's block either. I think it's like, I think when people talk about writer's block, they're more talking about like, they're sort of like getting stuck with something. Mm-hmm. And then it's like, and there's like certain things where like, no matter how hard you push, you're not going to like unstick it.
Yeah.
So what you really need to do is kind of like take a step back and go look at why you're having that problem, as opposed to like trying to solve it directly. So like, for example, if it's like, you know, like, I don't know what to do with this scene. I don't know what the character is supposed to say. It's like, rather than being like paralyzed by like that choice, it's like, you kind of have to go back and be like, okay, well, how did I get myself into the position of being where like, I don't know what to do in the scene, or I don't know what this character is supposed to say. What am I missing about this character? And then I think like, once you kind of like get to the foundation underneath it, like, you know, then you just, it's like you sort of, when you fix like the real problem, then you're able to kind of go forward.
No, I think you're right. I think it's a matter of the problem that sometimes we face on the page isn't the problem of that page. It happened a few pages ago.
Exactly.
You know, few being, it could be 100 pages ago, who knows? But the point is that in the previous pages, something took you in a direction that didn't allow for a resolution that's going to actually work. And you have to kind of figure out where the, you know, what the root causes and go back and, you know, work your way back through it. And I think the other thing is, it's a preciousness thing for a lot of people when they scream and yell, you know, about not being able to do a thing. And I'm like, well, I think a lot of it comes to this fear factor of not living up to your dreams and expectations of what you want this to be.
Yeah.
So rather than just, you know, sort of doing this pitch out there to the universe when you're making a thing, saying, listen, it's going to suck. And I just have to rely on the fact that I'll be able to fix the thing that sucks. So it becomes a thing that's worth, you know, looking at.
Yeah. I mean, even like, I think even highly accomplished writers and unlike, you know, like people who are like, you know, made millions off their writing or whatever would probably all tell you that like their first drafts are terrible and, you know, just like garbage and it's not, but that's the thing is that nobody, you're not putting the first draft into the world. It's like, you know, that's like just for you and, or, you know, maybe like, I don't know, an editor or something, but you know, it's like, you always have like a chance to like refine it. And I read something recently that I thought was really a nice way of putting it, where somebody said, I forget who said it, but they said that like, the first draft is basically you're putting the sand in the sandbox and knowing that you're going to be able to build a castle out of it later.
Yeah. That's great.
Yeah.
Well, you know, yeah. A tip of the cap to whoever said that. I think that's a beautiful way of putting it. It sounds so Neil Gaiman-y, doesn't it?
Yeah, it might be Neil Gaiman, but I don't think it was.
Are we misattributing something?
It really wouldn't surprise me.
No, of course. Yeah. Of course. Once again, he did it. He said that perfectly inspiring piece of wisdom. So am I off my rocker that you also do creative direction as well?
Oh, yeah. No, I do. Yeah. Like copywriting and creative direction, mostly for ad agencies.
Mm-hmm. Are you in-house or are you freelance or what's your status for that?
Now I'm freelance now. I was in-house for like a number of years.
Yeah.
But yeah, the industry is in a very odd place right now.
It is. Freelance is,
a lot of people are freelancing.
Yeah. I've a friend of mine in an ad agency. I think he's back in New York. I don't remember. I'm not 100% sure, but you know, he was, you know, lives in New Jersey and was, you know, really happy when the pandemic came and he got to work at home.
Mm-hmm.
And I just kept thinking like, you know, having worked in design firms and I kept going like, I'm really worried about the state of our creative agencies around the country because those conversations that the random ones that you have, where that idea comes out of that random conversation, they're gone. Mm-hmm. They're effectively eliminated, which really just relies on a lot of creativity happening in a vacuum, which I don't think is as it's not a pretty way of creating things, you know, this randomness, but the bottom line is that it's a higher contact patch, you know, like a car, and tires have more grip on the ground. And I think if everybody is sort of spread out, we lose a lot of that contact.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, you know, you know, it's like, you know, I live in Jersey, work in Manhattan usually, but it's like everybody's kind of like home experience is like different, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And that kind of like, you know, not that I love, like, you know, an hour on the train or whatever, like commuting in, but it's like, but there is like something like when everybody's kind of like at the office at the same time and everybody's, you know, doing all the kind of like after work social stuff together. It's like you kind of all a little more on the same page. Whereas like, you know, working from home, it's like, you know, I might have a day where like, yeah, I'm working, but I also have to like run out and buy groceries or sure. I have to, you know, yeah. mow lawn. But then when like, you know, my teammate has to, you know, is like working feverishly or, you know, there's just like a little bit of a disconnect between mm-hmm. like what everybody's doing at any given moment that makes it a little more challenging. And then it's like, I think with just sort of like overall, just like the economy and like the tenor of things, you have like most clients that are doing advertising are like being very, very cost conscious, very conservative, very not willing to kind of take chances or do things that are right. really like, you know, bold. And it's like, again, it just makes it that much harder to like get everyone on the same page where you can maybe like have a better chance of like pushing something like that through when everybody's all scattered. So, you yeah. know, it's challenging, but, you know.
Yeah.
That's what we do.
So we're, I mean, so I came into, you know, advertising design through comic books. That was like sort of my post comic book career. I was like, okay, what do I do next? And I happened to be teaching at a advertising design school. And I was like, oh, well, this seems to be kind of a logical landing pad. Were you just a big, you know, sort of writing fan and comic fan, and then said, I'm going to, you know, write some stuff on the side?
Yeah, no, I was always like a writing fan. And I think like when I was in like high school and college, I was like, I had it in my mind that like I wanted to be like a writer, like a fiction writer, mm-hmm. you know, like I would write like great like sci-fi novel or fantasy novel or something like that. But, you know, I was young and didn't have a lot of the, you know, like strength that you need to like, you know, get through a novel, you know mm-hmm. what I mean? Like I would like run out of steam, like, I don't know, 3 or 4 chapters in, and I just had like a whole tranche of like unfinished stuff.
It's so, yeah, it's frustrating,
you know? And, but like in the meantime, I was like, well, I really need to like do something that is going to like, pay my bills. And, you know, I had a friend who worked at an ad agency who said, why don't you, you know, like, come in. So I actually started in advertising in like the IT department. Like it was literally like a part-time job that I was doing my senior year of college. And like, I was working on people who were working on ads, like fixing their computers and mm-hmm. looking at what they were doing and being like, wow, that looks like way more fun than what I'm doing. How do I, you know, and I started making friends, and how do I do that? How do I do what you do? And with the help of like some friends and mentors, got like a portfolio together and started doing that. And like, but in my head, it was always like, oh, but like my writing is like separate from like mm-hmm. whatever I'm doing at the ad agency. And then at a certain point, I had like an idea that I again, like it was like an aborted attempt at a novel. And I was just thinking about it, and I was like, you know, like, what about like a comic book? You know, like I've always loved comics, but I never really tried writing one. And I didn't even really know how to like write a comic script. So I was just like, you know, I don't even know what's involved. So I just started doing some research, and I found like an online class that was supposed to teach like comic script writing. And basically like the class, at the end of it, you like wound up with like a 5-page comic script. Mm-hmm. excuse me. And I just said, okay, well, you know, I've already invested this much time and money into it and I have this script. Let me just try to get it drawn and cause I can't draw. So, so I was like, let me try to find an artist and I'm going to produce this. And, you know, if it comes out terrible or if it's like really hard and I don't like it, I don't need to ever do it again, but let me just do it just to do it. And I did it. I found an artist online. The pages came in, they were great. And it was just so exciting to like do it and then see it finished that like just having that one finished thing boosted my confidence so much that I was like, okay, well, I can do this again. And I did another 5-page story and another 5-page story. And then eventually moved on to like a little bit longer stuff and started going to comic conventions and meeting people in the industry and submitting work. And and then eventually I got my first, I was self-publishing for a while, but eventually got my first series picked up by a publisher called IDW. Mm-hmm. They put it out in 2016. It was called Gutter Magic. It was a fantasy story.
Sure. Yeah.
And then from there, it was just sort of like just building on that. Like, you know, then I had like Gutter Magic was sort of like my portfolio for comics. Like I would, you know.
Well, it's proof of concept in the terms of like,
yeah, exactly.
I can do this, you know, it's.
Yeah.
Because it's tough, man. It's tough to do the thing. You know, we all have the thing, like you were saying about the novel. I had that. I'm like, okay, here, I know what I want to write. I know the story. It's going to be great. And then a chapter and a half in, I'm just looking at that blinking cursor going, I don't know what to do next.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
And I think it's like, and it's kind of interesting that you were very like, okay, well, let me just find someone who can give me at least the sort of the direction, the encouragement and the time. And I guess maybe that reflects back to your getting into advertising because you asked the question. You didn't just go like,
yeah,
boy, they got a better job than me. My life sucks. You know, like versus like accepting some sort of fate. You were like, how can I change mine?
Yeah. I mean, that was big because I think like, if I hadn't done that, I can't say for sure, but like, you know, I could just very easily have like been doing the same thing. Like there are people I worked with like at that first job that are still doing that, mm-hmm. You know, like you can like build a career in it. So it's, it really is just like asking the question and just being like honest about it. You know, it's like, you know, like, it's like, yeah, like I want to do that. It's not like, you know, not trying to trick anybody into, you know, getting something that they don't want to give up. It's like, you know, it's like, it's really just like, you know, you're pretty awesome. Like, how do I become as awesome as you? Or,
I don't want you, I want to steal your life. I just want to, I want to do something that, you know, I can feel pretty good about.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I think most people are very happy to kind of like share and help people out. You know, it's not mm-hmm. the sort of thing where, you know, it's like a zero sum game where like, you know, in order for me to win, you have to lose. It's like, there's, you know, there's plenty of room out there for like everybody to like, you know, anybody who wants to write a comic or make a comic mm-hmm. to make theirs. And, you know, so I've always, and you know, in advertising too, it's like, you know, you might be in competition for like a certain position or a certain job or something, but just like, but on the whole, it's not like, you know, wanting to do it is like, you know, gonna like put anybody else out. So most people are like very happy to help or like, you know, at least with like knowledge and things like that.
Yeah. So what year was that you worked your way into advertising?
Like the early 2000s.
Okay. Right.
Say like 2005, 2007, something like
and
that.
And was that in New York or was that somewhere else?
Yeah.
Okay.
That was in New York at this agency called BBDO.
Sure. Yeah.
And I started out in the presentations department. So basically, like, what I was doing was like actually like design work, but not like highbrow design work. Like, it was very much like, you know,
PowerPoint design
putting
work
together, like PowerPoint, yeah. PowerPoint designs and things. And the funny thing about that era was that there was kind of a generation of like art directors who kind of came up doing traditional paste up when they were doing an ad, and not really knowing like programs like Photoshop and InDesign and Illustrator and stuff like that, really not knowing it very well, or like, or if they did know it, they were not like super fast and like super efficient. So a big part of my job was sitting there with like
the creatives and the senior like, person who had no idea what the
being like, can you move this, can you move that, and it was just, it was like an sort of like I was helping them, but it was also like an education, you know what I mean? Because every day I would see like what kind of ideas they were putting forth, what was making it through, what wasn't making it through,
right,
what they liked, what they didn't like. And again, it was like through those relationships, I found people that were willing to kind of like look at my work in terms of like a portfolio and say like, okay, well, like, this is good, this isn't, you know, you should work on this, you should not work on that. And I just eventually started taking the jobs that like nobody really wanted to do. So it's like, so I was working with people who like, let's say for one of the first clients I worked on was FedEx, right? So I have had a friend, creative director for FedEx. They're doing a TV campaign. So they're doing like three TV commercials. But FedEx also wants a bunch of Facebook posts, and they want a radio spot, and they want some print headlines, and they want all this stuff. And it's like, and my CD friend, what do they care about? They care about the TV, because they get to go shoot the commercial like in LA, and that's what everybody's going to see, and nobody's going to read the Facebook posts or the banner ads or whatever. So I was just like, hey, I'm trying to get some practice writing. Can I like, you know, help out? Sure. I'm like, we need 10 posts. So I would send them like, you know, 20, 30, whatever.
Yeah.
We need some radio scripts and like help them out enough that it was like, eventually they were just like, oh, well, then they would start bringing stuff to me. Be like, hey, do you have time to do this? Do you have time to do that? And for a while I was doing both jobs, and then eventually it was just like, all right, just you know, move your desk up here by us and start working up here. And that's really just how it happened. I was still at BBDO. I was there for like about a decade.
Okay.
And then just kind of went on from there, like, you know, up through, like, I started as a copywriter and then senior copywriter, ACD, CD.
Yeah, that was a time I was working at Condé Nast. I was in there for, I don't even remember the name of the magazine. It was Lucky Magazine, possibly. I can't remember which one it was. And we were still using Cork at the time.
Yeah, I remember those.
And like not too long after that, or during that time, I was talking with the art director at the time, and she's like, yeah, I think we're gonna switch over to InDesign, because I was using InDesign for my own like freelance work, and I like it, you really love it, because we're using Illustrator, Photoshop, and Quark, and like it's so much more compatible. And then I remember when they switched over, and I just kept saying to people, I'm like, everybody's going to be switching over to InDesign. They're like, what are you talking about? Everyone's been using Quark for 20 years. I'm like, trust me, like, it's just going to go overnight. And it did. It just poof changed.
Yeah. I remember they had like, they gave us like a seminar or something. Like it was just like, it was sort of like, everybody, you know, like we're going to show you like how to migrate over, like how to, basically it was just like, here's how to do what you do in Quark in InDesign. Yeah. And it was just like, from the minute I picked it up, I was like, oh, this is so much better.
So much better. And it's so funny because you figure, I mean, Adobe had to have, like, for them, I think it was a big investment to do in design. And I don't think the investment was so much on the programming end. I think it was on the education end. I think they had mm-hmm. to spend a ton of money because they were going for every ad agency in the country. They were going for every publication in the country. Like, the list was huge. And for them to say, we need to get the sort of the holy trinity of programs locked down, that was mm-hmm. the move. Because this was really still, you know, the web stuff was all very much coding at that point. It was Dreamweaver and coding. Like, that's what you had, mm-hmm. and Flash.
Yeah.
So
yeah,
they were really looking for how do we handle the sort of the creative, you know, classic design end of things. And then it was an interesting period. Okay, so that's good to know, like, the timeline for that. So then I guess somewhere within that, the next 5 years, you started saying, okay, I'm gonna venture into doing some comic books.
Yeah, I mean, that was like around 2009, 2010, mm-hmm. when it was 2008, and I remember it was because my first son was born in 2008, and I was thinking to myself, like, wow, babies are a lot of work. I really don't have as much free time as I used to. Mm-hmm. So what I really need to do is, in, like, you know, the couple of hours of free time I might get, like, in a given day or a given week, do I want to spend that just chilling out and doing the things I like watching TV, movies, playing video games, or do I want to dedicate that to writing? Because previously I was able to do both, you mm-hmm. know, like, I'll write sometimes, relax some other time. But I was like, this is the time where, like, I might have to give up writing, like, because yeah. I just won't have the time for it. I might have to, like, maybe not permanently, but, like, at least for, like, a few years. But I was like, I'm going to start dedicating whatever free time I do have to writing. And I talked to my wife about taking the class, and she was on board. It was like 1 hour a week. So it wasn't like a huge, mm-hmm. you know, it wasn't like, you know, going to college or something like that. And then that was really what kind of, like, got me into shape as far as, like, a writing practice, you know what I mean?
What was that? Because, I mean, like, you're not alone in that. Like, I think there's so many mm-hmm. people out there who want to do the thing, whatever it is. Mm-hmm. And the hardest part is making that time available to yourself. Yeah. And, you know, I remember struggling with the idea of writing, you know, 10-ish years ago. And I had the hardest time even saying, I can write. I can be a writer. Like, because I did writing in comic books, but it was only to solve a problem. Like, oh, hey, the writer can't do this thing. And I'm like, well, I can't not do this project. So what do we need to do? And I would write something. Mm-hmm. Or if a script was not good and an editor didn't want to make the writer rewrite it, I rewrote it. Well, you know, it was all these mm-hmm. kinds of sort of, like, things to do to get the job done. But what's always scared me was dialogue, terrified me as a kid. Like, I was just, that felt so much more permanent than a story idea.
Right.
But having that sort of, like, temerity to say, okay, well, this little space of whatever this is going to be mine, and I'm going to do the thing in this space. Like, what were the things that you, I guess you carved out to do to give yourself that space?
Yeah. Well, it was just like, you know, it was just kind of like being a little bit more deliberate about when my free time was going to be, you mm-hmm. know? So it was like, a lot of it was like coordinating with my wife, because, you know, we were both taking care of the baby, but I also had work. So it was like, okay, well, work, I'm going to go to work. Mm-hmm. Right. But, like, and, you know, but I would like, you know, an hour on Saturday or whatever, where I could just go to I'll go to a coffee shop, then I'll write, I'll come back, and, you know, the rest of the day is whatever the rest of the day is. But like for that hour, like that's my writing time. And it really is like, not that it's not always easy to like commit that time, but mm-hmm. it really is that simple. It's really just saying like an hour and like, you know, if that's all you have, that's all you have. Yeah. I would say my train ride, you know, we were living in Brooklyn. Mm-hmm. I was working in Manhattan. So, not so much on the train ride back, but on the train ride in the morning when I was still kind of like fresh, I'd be like, you know, it was like a 40-minute train ride. And, you know, if you don't want to count, like, you know, sitting down and then like getting up and like all that stuff. So, but I was like, so I got like a good, like 30 minutes. So if I can get a seat, like, you know, mm-hmm. I can get my notebook out and just like write in the notebook. And that was it, you know. And it's just, it was like, you know, a lot of it is, it's just grabbing the time where you can get it, mm-hmm. but then making sure that you use like whatever time you can get, you put to use.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah, the notebook is really huge. Like, I think that's like one practice I could always like encourage people to do is not just have mm-hmm. it, not just write in a notebook, but get in the practice of every time something pops in your head, write it down in the notebook.
Yeah.
Cause you'll never remember.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And it could be like the most profound thing that you think of. And then like the doorbell will ring and it'll just like fly out of your head.
Sure.
You know?
Yeah.
And sometimes you won't even remember that you forgot it.
You totally. Know what I mean? Like, totally, yeah. Because someone's selling you gutters and you go, oh, I can't. Yeah. You know, that's it. That's the end of the greatest idea ever. I think it's, I mean, and I'm a huge proponent of handwriting as much as possible. Mm-hmm. I'm not so bold as to like handwrite, you know, a novel. That's crazy talk. But the idea of just letting your hand and eye do a thing, like in this sort of real creative mm-hmm.
Yeah, there's definitely like a physical kind of like neurological pathway mm-hmm. kind of component to it or something.
Yeah,
that's really useful.
Yeah, no, I think it's super important. I just love, and I like the idea of, you know, taking all the times. I think about like you know when you're not reading enough, like you're just not reading enough books, mm-hmm. and then you kick yourself. But then like you know the times when you're reading books. You're carrying them around with you everywhere. Like I'll carry mm-hmm. the book that I'm reading wherever I go because there's five yeah. minutes here. There's 10 minutes there. And I will just boop right into the book. Have a great time. And I burn through books by doing that versus, all right, I'll do it right before I go to bed. And then it's like everything mm-hmm. tacks all the way up to like right before you go to bed. And you're like, oh, I guess I'm not reading tonight.
Right. Yeah.
And I think if you can kind of take that, if you don't have the luxury of, you know, not having kids, you know, which are their own version of a PlayStation. So you get to play with them. But mm-hmm. If you can't have this time afforded to you, you have to make the time somehow. And,
yeah. Yeah. And you also, I think you also like, you just have to, I think, be okay with the fact that it might take longer than you, initially
totally.
Envisioned or wanted it to. So, you know, like it might take you like a year or something to write something mm-hmm. that you want it to be done in like 3 months or whatever, but it's like, you know, sorry, it's totally. You know, life is not on your timetable.
Well, did you thinking about those, you know, those novel ideas that you put in the book, in the, you know, in the drawer, did you pull them out and say, hey, can I adapt this to a comic book? Or did any of those make a second life?
Well, Gutter Magic did.
Okay.
That was like,
which was the first main one.
That was the first yeah. one. Since then, not really. I think a lot of them a lot of them weren't very good, and I can kind of like say that now and see that now with, you know, the benefit of like a little distance and more like, you know, knowledge of like myself as a storyteller and storytelling in general. But I think it's more like I would pull elements from them that would kind of like come to life in new and different ways, mm-hmm. rather than like just straight up being like, oh, I remember this idea, I'm gonna write it as a comic.
Yeah,
it was more just like, oh yeah, like I had that idea for you know, I don't know, like a fantasy country or something, and let me see if I can incorporate that, or that was like an interesting character name, let me, you know, or character idea, what can I do with that now. But it was like kind of less about like lifting it like out of the drawer whole cloth and getting back to work on it again, and just sort of like remembering certain elements that of like what I wanted to do in the first place, and just doing it now with like more skill and knowledge than I had at that time.
Yeah, totally. I think there are things that we are attracted to, especially when we start trying to create stuff, that sort of sit in our head. Like this is, there are these things that sort of are the catalyst to do the thing. And then of course craft can kind of, you know, step in and say, not so quick, Sonny. Yeah. But I think we can always kind of retap into that.
Yeah. And I mean, and the other thing is that, you know, you kind of, or at least for me, I don't know, luckily enough, like I haven't like stopped having new ideas.
Yeah.
So it's like, you know, it's like, yeah, like I had like old ideas that may have like seemed like important at the time, or like were very relevant to like what I was going through at the time. But I think like the newer ideas that come up are things that like, easier to me to write for, because like they're sort of bound up with like the stuff that's going on in my life now. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Whereas like, you know, now I can write like, you know, a father character, and it's going to mean a lot more than the father character I would have wrote when I was like 19 or 20 years old. Cause then it would have just been like, you know, my best guess, whereas right. like now I have like, I can make a more educated guess. And it's not that you just, it's not like, you know, you can only write what you know. It's like, you know, like I've written about, you know, characters who are cannibals in my horror stuff, and I'm not a cannibal, and I would never be a cannibal, we hope. But you know what I mean? It's like, it's my sort of like best guess as to like what would kind of like push someone
to that edge,
to that. But you know, it's just like I found like, you know, the stuff that's going on in your life like works its way into your writing, whether you kind of want it to or not. So the more of your life you've lived, the more, you know, interesting stuff you can kind of work in there.
I totally agree. And I think I get so much inspiration outside of traveling and seeing people and, you know, sort of interacting with others. You know, reading and sort of getting as much information from as wide of a net as possible, because the damnedest things just tip off and go, oh, that would be a really interesting thing if I tweaked this and then plunked it into here. What a fun little, you know, thing that would be.
I mean, it's like, you know, it's like if you wanted to, like, you know, when I was younger, like we were talking about, like there were stories with things like robots and artificial intelligence and stuff like that, you know, and I probably had like ideas for like sci-fi stories that like incorporated those, or, you know, but like today, like we're still arguing and discussing the same things, but it means something totally different today than it does, you know, like back then. So, you know, like going back to old stuff, it's like a lot of times it just doesn't, you know, like the world has changed, and if those ideas haven't, you know.
Yeah. No, the people don't change, the circumstances do. And we're really, really good at repeating ourselves, just a different dance partner. So with IDW, that was a pitch. You pitched gutter magic with them.
Yeah, well, I mean, I had put together the first issue on my own and okay. kind of just self-published it. But when I say self-published, like, it's not like you could go to a store and buy it or something. Like, it was literally like I printed up like maybe 100 copies and I would just take it with me to like comic conventions and hand it out to people and things like that. But I had gotten friendly with an editor over there and sent the first issue and said, like, look, like, this is just like issue one. I want to do like, you know, I have like a whole series in mind. And that was basically my pitch, was like, mm-hmm. like I pitched the whole series, but I was like, but this, like, if you look at this issue one, like, this is like a representation of like, you know, like what we want to do. And, you know, he liked it. He showed it to, you know, his higher ups, they mm-hmm. liked it. And that was basically it. And then it was like, okay, well, like, whereas like I had this, like, this issue one that I had been like working on for like, you know, 2-3 years. And like, that was like my only thing. And then it was like, okay, well, I got back in touch with the artist and I was like, great. Like, now we can do issues, you know,
right.
2, 3, and 4. So like we got back on that and put it out through them. And yeah, like, again, then I was just taking the collected edition around, showing it to others. Like, hey.
You had a bigger prop.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it's like the same thing, like over mm-hmm. and over again. You just sort of like, you show the work that you did, or, you know, I think like when it really kind of like, the big difference or like the big difference I noticed was, there was 1 year, I think, when, my first horror book was called Road of Bones, and Road of Bones came out, and I went to New York Comic Con that year, and I had been going to New York Comic Con for like the past like 5 years or whatever. And it was the first time when I would go around to like a publisher booth and be like, oh, hey, I'm Rich Dueck. I wrote Road of Bones. And then I would be here. Oh yeah, I heard of that.
Nice.
Like, I heard that was good. And then I was like, oh, like, you know, like, because before it'd be like, here's my book, Gutter Magic. And it was like, oh, okay, I'll check it out. Or thanks. It's like, you know, yeah, thanks. It's just sort of like, that was like when I started to feel like, okay, well, this is like more than a hobby. Mm-hmm. It's not full career yet, because I still have to have a day job and things like that, but it's like I'm actually doing this. Mm-hmm. Well, it's like when you know, sort of like your, I guess, reputation precedes you a little bit.
When the work is recognized, and I'm not talking an award. Yeah. I'm just saying that your peers go, oh yeah, yeah, that's a thing, you know, and that's when you go, oh,
yeah,
it's a. And I, you know, that's the, there's the sick, twisted bit about comic books is like, that's enough to keep most of us going. Right.
Yeah. Well, yeah. Cause there's not a lot of money in them.
No,
so.
No, it's not a big cash cow. I think it's great. Like that model, and it, listen, the model isn't different than doing some sample pages and showing the latest sample pages. You were just, mm-hmm. you know, you were paying someone to do some artwork and you got an actual product and you would go to the next thing. And I think that's really, you know, that's a smart way to do it, because it's a lot easier to get someone to read a comic book than to read a script.
Oh, nobody reads scripts. That was one thing.
I read scripts. I'll tell you. Well, I read.
Them. I mean, like,
but
I'm saying, like when you're talking about like pitching something to like an editor or something like mm-hmm. that, it's like you can't pitch with just a script because they just literally don't have time to read them.
Right.
Like, so you really kind of have to pitch with like with a finished comic, mm-hmm. or at least like
the artwork,
something in finished form. Like, it doesn't have to be the whole book, but it's like, if you do like, even if you got somebody to draw like the first 5 pages of the issue or the first 10 pages or whatever it mm-hmm. is, it's like, if you're like just trying to grab somebody like on the convention floor or at a publisher booth and just be like, hey, can you take a look at my comic? Like, you have to like have like a comic to show them. Like, you can't show them a script. They're not going to like stop everything and like sit and like read your script. But, like, the comic, they can kind of like
get the highlighter out. Leaf
through and get the idea.
Yeah. It's true. So you said it took a few years to get that first issue of Gutter Magic done. And then the sort of, the, you know, the light turns green. What was the internal like element? I mean, listen, you're working professionally as a copywriter. So you know how to turn things on and do the work, but it's a different world. Were you sort of servicing as, you know, editor and art director for the book with your artist? Like, were you over kind of like,
Okay. Yeah, I did all the layout. I did, you know, I put it in InDesign, made the PDFs, I designed the logo, did all that stuff, just to like save money. And I mean, and the reason it took like 2 or 3 years is not because I didn't like have the story or not that like it took that long to write. It was really just like, you know, when you're putting a comic book together, it's like, you know, I wasn't going to like ask somebody to draw an entire issue on credit.
On gratis.
So yeah. I need to pay the artist for what they're doing. And it was just sort of like, okay, well, you know, this month I have like $100 to put towards it, or this month I have 300 or whatever. So it was like, really just like, hey, Brett is the artist I was working. His name is Brett Barkley, really talented guy. And I was just like, Brett, like, I got enough for, you know, the next 5 pages. So, you know, and it was just sort of like banking the pages. And it just took a while to like, you know, to get it all together. And then that was the line art. And then you got to find a color artist. And then you have to find a letterer and, you know, you have to get it printed and things like that. So it was just, you know, it took a while to just sort of like just materially like get everything together. And then that was the thing. It was like, you know, by the time it was done, I had sunk like, you know, a couple $1,000 into it. And I was just like, well, like if I keep going, like I'm going to start have to use like my credit card or something. And it's, so I was like, let me roll with this for a little bit, get this out there, show this to people. And, you know, if people are starting to like it and it's resonating with people, will do more. But like, if this one does like suck, or this is one that like, you know, nobody likes, like maybe I'll have to like think of another one, or, you know, like do something else or like whatever.
I wrote it the other day to someone. And I just said, like, you know, there are those times. I can't remember what it was, but I mean, there's a time in your life where you just have to say, I'm going to place a bet on myself.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, they don't always pay off. You know, they pay off far fewer than they actually often pay off. And, but I think if you do enough of a thing, enough of professional creative work, you can get to a point where you realize like, okay, I'm not fooling myself. Like I know what people write checks for. I've seen it. I've done it. You know, I think this, you know, so this is not some sort of wacky, you know, sort of game I'm playing with myself, but the time and the costs are real. And you have to kind of say, okay, well, I'm going to do this and that's not going to deter me. If it takes 2 years, it takes 2 years, but you do it.
And you know, that's really what it is. It's exactly what you said. It's like placing a bet on yourself, or like taking a chance on yourself, because you don't know like what's going to be popular. You don't know what's not going to be popular. Like I've had books that I thought were, you know, of my own and like other people's that I thought were going to like do amazing and were barely a blip. And then there were ones that, I didn't really have any expectations for that, you know, people will come up and tell me that they loved. So,
yeah.
You know, like I didn't think Road of Bones was going to be popular at all, because I never thought of myself as a horror writer. Mm-hmm. I was always more of a speculative fiction, like, you know, science fiction, fantasy, whatever you want to call it. But it just so happened that when I was reading about the setting for Rota Bones, which was like the Soviet gulag in Siberia, I just thought to myself, I was like, I don't really need to kind of like take this to like some other planet or whatever. Like, this is like a really cool setting. Like, I can write it here, and I can write it as a horror story. I've never written horror. I don't know if I'm any good at writing horror, but I'm going to give it a shot, mm-hmm. you know? And it, like, that book, I wasn't known as a horror writer or anything, but that book went, I think the first issue went to 3 printings, you know, and got nominated for a Bram Stoker Award, which is like, you know, totally unexpected.
Yeah.
And I was just like, okay, like, great. I still don't know that I'm a horror writer, right. But, you know, like, I guess at least I know I can do it pretty well, or, you know, to the point that like people, you know, people like resonate with it. So, you know, so I've kept up like doing horror stuff, even though now I feel like a lot more comfortable writing it. Mm-hmm. But like, if you had asked me, and I think even if you had asked the publisher whether that book was going to do good, they probably would have said, no, probably not. Like, I remember the editor in chief at the time said, like, I love this book. I don't know how we're going to sell it, mm-hmm. but I love it. And it's like, that's not exactly the words you want to hear from your publisher, no. that I don't know how to sell it. But I was like, okay, you know, as long as you guys are behind it and we're going to do it, like,
yeah.
you know, we'll figure it out. And then it came out, favorable reviews, sold out. And then they were very happy.
Sure.
Then they were like, okay, now we know how to sell it. So, but it just goes to show, like, you can't predict like what's gonna hit and what's gonna miss.
Well, there's a Spartan quality to that story in your writing, and the sort of lifeless landscape that your mm-hmm. artist brings to the table. I think those two come together really well and create a almost, you know, in a weird twisted way, a Treasure of the Sierra Madre kind of
right.
setting, where you have mm-hmm. these people who are struggling in an environment that is trying to kill them at all cost, but they're being driven by something else. And in this case is survival and, you know, versus, you know, treasure hunting.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I mean, the art had a lot to do with
yeah.
it too. I mean, Alex is an amazing artist, and, you know, like the book, like, I don't think at the time, I don't think there were many books that like looked like it. So it was like very kind of like, you know, different. So yeah, I mean, like, when I talk about it as like my book, I mean, like, you know, our book, mm-hmm. like the entire team, but yeah, you know, and then like everything I learned writing Rota Bones, I put into Sea of Sorrows. Everything I learned writing Sea of Sorrows, I put into Breath of Shadows. And that was just sort of like the progression there and like the horror stuff.
So what was the internal vision for you? Because, you know, there are two ways to kind of go through a creative career. You do the work that gets put in front of you, or you have like some sort of further goal where you're like, I got to get to this point. And then you have to kind of figure out how you get there. Did you have that picture, or were you kind of just like, I'm happy doing this for now, and then a picture appeared?
Yeah, I think like for me, like there are certain things like that I would love to do, as far as like, you know, if somebody put in front of me like, hey, we want you to write Superman, or we want you to write Batman, or we want you to write, you know, or even like something like not like superhero involved, like, you know, I want you to write, I don't know, Star Wars or whatever. Like, I don't, like, whatever those things are, like, I would love to do them. But I think for me, it's like every story that I tell, whether it's like for like a character that exists already or something of my own, it's for me, just, it's what makes me happy and makes me what I do, is like telling the story, you know. Mm-hmm. It's weird. It's almost like, I don't really have like an agenda as far as like, some philosophy I'm trying to like impart to the world, or some like great insight I have that I don't think anybody else has. It's, for me, a lot of it is really just sort of, I enjoy the process of going from an idea and turning it into something that I can communicate, like taking whatever's in my head and mm-hmm. putting it out in a way that like somebody who's outside of my head can understand it and right. enjoy it and feel hopefully some of the same things that I was feeling like when I was creating it, you know? So it's almost like, so for me, like there's no like end in sight. Like there's no sort of like, okay, well, I'm just going to finish my Lord of the Rings and then I'm never going to write again. Like I'm going to be done. Mm-hmm. Like for me, it's like, it's just like, I enjoy the act, like as much of a slog as writing can be sometimes. And as much of, you know, as hard work as it is, it's like, I enjoy the act of it enough that like, I don't feel like I'm ever going to feel like satisfied or that I'm ever going to stop, you know, at least trying to get stuff out there. Mm-hmm. So, you know, like, so it really is almost like a spiritual thing, I guess. Like, I don't know. Like it's not like, it's not just about like the finished product for me. It's also a lot about like the process and the practice of it.
Yeah.
Like I find like when I don't write, or when I don't have time to write for whatever reason, life or whatever, that's like when I'm like miserable. And then I'll just sort of like remember like, oh yeah, I haven't written in a while. Like I should really just like sit down and do some writing. And then lo and behold, I feel better. So
Yeah. Why am I acting like a bastard? No, I can relate to that. So, you know, as opposed to, you know, negotiating, you know, an hour at Starbucks a week with a, you know, an infant in the house. What's the process for you now? I guess we're kind of 10-ish years into it. So.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well now, like I do balance things with my deadlines and stuff, but I just try to take like the morning most days, like, you know, 9 to 12 or whatever, or 8 to 12, depending, to just basically like, writing business kind of stuff. So mm-hmm. it's like, so there'll be like some writing, there'll be like emails following up with things, you know, since I'm doing comics and graphic novels, like, there's like I have to like kind of review art that comes in and make corrections and things like that. But it's basically like having like those kind of like the morning is like my kind of like office hours mm-hmm. of like, you know, I'll be like doing the actual writing, doing the, like the business aspects of it. And then the afternoons, I just try to, you know, my kids are older now, but like, you know, they're still like, they come home from school and, you know, have to, you know, take care of them a little bit and stuff. So that's kind of like also like the afternoons and evenings are my time to like, kind of take in, you know, like take in like, life and, you know, or even like read stuff or watch TV shows or things like that, or just sort of like, you know, feed the, like put the stuff in that's going to like, you know, kind of tumble around in my head for a while and then, mm-hmm. you know, come out when I write. And then, you know, but then it's also like, but then like if I have a deadline and I need to make more progress, like I'll devote more time, like maybe evenings or, you know, a lot of times, just to like switch things up, like on the weekend, like I'll go out and like write at like a coffee shop or, like a local, like, you know, it, like the weather's nice, like maybe I might like stay outside or something like that, but just to switch things up and like, you know, switch scenery up and different vibe and things like that.
Yeah.
But yeah, you know, like, and again, it's like, that's like the ideal and that I stick to, like, you know, most of the time, but sometimes I don't. And,
yeah, life,
you know, yeah, it's just life. And, you know, you just sort of try to, yeah, have to like be okay with it, you know?
Totally. Well, yeah. I mean, it's aside from the sort of the you know, the invasive nature of, you know, of life and work and all those things, they come into play. Mm-hmm. But for me, like, I have to be as sort of diligent as I can about myself, just, you know, because yeah. if I'm not rigorous there, then if I don't care, then who cares? Right. Like, right. So it's a battle in that respect.
Yeah. Like, that's the thing. It's like, you know, nobody, it's like, you know, you don't, there's no, like, it's not like school where like you have a teacher grading you or like, you know, making sure that like you, you know, show up mm-hmm. to take the test or like anything like that. Or it's, and it's not even like, you know, it's not even like a 9-to-5 job where like you have to clock in or clock out. Like there's no, you know, like, it's really just like, you know, you, so mm-hmm. Yeah,
no, I get it. I mean, my schedule is pretty similar. I'm 9-to-1, and then after mm-hmm. I scarf down some food, I'll do client work or whatever I need to in the afternoons, and
yeah,
that's just kind of how the day goes. So looking at the script now, you know, looking at the blinking cursor, what is your viewpoint on it? As opposed to when you 10 years ago, like 10 years ago, you were putting together your scripts in one fashion. And now how do you view it and how do you approach it?
Mm. Well, I think like in the beginning, I was a lot more verbose than I am now. Like, and I think that's mainly like a confidence. I think it's like two things when you're writing a script, because like the script isn't like the final product.
Mm-hmm.
So it's really not meant for anybody than except the artist who's going to like have to draw from that script. So I think in the beginning, there's sort of like, I think a lot of people, and myself included, had a tendency to kind of like really be concerned that like I would be understood, that the artist would understand like what I'm trying to show here. So mm-hmm. I would be very like put in a lot of information about like what I had in my head about like being there. But I think what I've learned over the years is, what the artist needs from me is actually a lot less than what I was giving them in the very beginning. So like, and like I said, I think it's like a confidence thing, because like I have to be like sort of like I had growing confidence that I could get my ideas across more succinctly, but it was also a trust thing. Like, I think when you're working with like a really good artist, like, you want to kind of give them room to interpret the script the way that they see best. Like, you want them to like bring something to the table, you know, like, mm-hmm. I don't want to like be dictating like every angle and every prop that's going to be in the scene. Like, you know, like at the end of the day, if I say like draw a kitchen, like it doesn't matter if there's like, you know, 3 coffee mugs on the wall or 4 coffee mugs on the wall.
Right.
And that's like
unless it matters.
unless it matters. Right. Like if it matters, it matters. But yeah. if it doesn't, it doesn't. And like, you know, giving the artist, I think most artists that I work with appreciate that sort of freedom mm-hmm. to say like, you know, like if I, like, if you're talking about something like, let's say something really simple, like a fight scene where like the hero is like punching out the villain, you know, it's like, there's a lot of different ways you could draw that. There's a lot of different ways you could write that. You know what I mean? Yeah. And it's like, if I'm writing like, oh, like he's, you know, punching with his left hand from low, like I catches him, you know, like mm-hmm. it's like, okay, like you can do it, but it's like, if I lock it in the script, then I'm kind of like taking away the artist's like choice to like say like, okay, well maybe like it'll look more dramatic from this angle. Maybe it'll look more dramatic from that angle. Maybe if I focus on, you know, the guy's eyes instead of the, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like whatever it is, I tend to find that like when you're working with like a good artist, it's like kind of the more freedom you give them to contribute to the way the page looks, the better the pages look, the more invested they are in the project. Mm-hmm. And you just sort of have to trust the process. And in the script writing stage, like trusting the process and letting go, it's like you're sort of like ceding a bit of control over like what the final project is going to look like.
Right.
And it's hard to be comfortable with that in the beginning because you just sort of like, it's scary to say like, you know, I'm going to like let the page be what, like, you know, mm-hmm. I'm going to let the artist decide like what the page is going to look like. Like, you know, it's like, no, I have to like lock down like what this page is going to look like. Otherwise it might look terrible.
Yeah.
But you know, the really easy solve to that is to not, number one, as much as you can, don't work with people who you don't trust are going to do a good job. And if you do find yourself in the position which where like it's a new artist that you've never worked with before and maybe not somebody that you necessarily chose, because sometimes when you get work for hire assignments, they say like, okay, we hired this artist to do it and this is who you're going to work with. And I don't think I've ever worked with anybody who's done like a bad job, but I'm just saying like when you're unfamiliar with the person and you don't really know them, then it's like, then okay. Like, you know, be a little more like, you know, a little more detailed, a little more, you know, mm-hmm. You know, clear, but also just recognize that like how to sift the stuff that matters from the stuff that doesn't matter.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And the stuff that doesn't matter, it doesn't matter. So it's like,
totally.
And that's it.
You know, I mean, I think we're plagued with, you know, I think we're plagued with the comparison to, you know, to brilliance, which is really tough. Mm-hmm. You know, yeah. And in this industry, you know, we put a few people up on pedestals and, you know, and Alan Moore is a writer. We all put him on the script, you know, on this pedestal. Yeah. And he's notorious for very detailed scripts. But he, you know, for him, that's important to being able to tell the story. He wants to have all right. this in there. And I don't think an artist like a Dave Gibbons needs that much direction, but that man is so technically gifted. He can take and all that information and still put it in a very clear and, you know, beautiful fashion.
Right. And that's the thing is like, everyone wants to like, it's like people want to be like Alan Moore, sure. but they're not Alan Moore. So it's like, you know, Alan Moore is like, talented enough and I guess experienced enough to kind of like, earn the right to, you know, have a script that's three times as long as the finished product
totally
project, because you know it's like it's Alan Moore, you know, but it's like, you know, me like writing my first thing or second thing or whatever, it's like that would be asking a lot of an artist to make them read through all that,
mm-hmm.
you know, for a script that, you know, might be good, might be bad, but it's not, I'm not Alan Moore. You know what I mean?
No. So. And I think, as you said earlier, it doesn't matter. Like if it doesn't matter, right. That was always my design ethos when I was teaching design. It was that, like, listen, if you're doing an ad or you're doing a design piece, like take everything out that doesn't support the message. Cause yeah. It's just, mm-hmm. It's a distraction. And mm-hmm. Look at what you need. And then that's the important thing. I like with covers, I would sit there when I had to do a cover, I would write a list of what I called, you know, well, I guess I'm blurring it between that and design, but I call them mandatories. Like this has to be here on the cover to tell this story. If I don't have this on here, right. it fails. Everything else is superfluous. And I think that's a bit like, I like that approach, how you're thinking, like that kind of makes script writing in that kind of mindset of like, this is it. Just tell what you need to tell. And, you know, let the artist, cause I'll tell you from my experience, the best scripts that I've worked from were the ones that didn't have as much information in them. And mm-hmm. So, you know, the traditional Marvel style scripts, I think I performed better on because I was like, oh, I'm invested. I get to tell a story here. And the DC scripts were much more sort of executioner, you know, like, okay, mm-hmm. Here's what it is. Yeah. I'll just make this happen. Yeah. Yeah. I'm sticking by that statement.
Yeah.
So, I mean, you've done some work for the big two, which is pretty cool. How did that come into play for you? Because I guess it's hard to not be excited as a fan of comic books when you get to, you know, someone hands opens up the toy chest and says, "Hey, play with this play character," with it. And you're like, "Thank you."
Yeah, it's amazing, and you know, it's like it's an amazing feeling, but it really just sort of comes from like building up a reputation and just sort of, you know, honestly, like just like networking, like, you know, for lack of a better term, like it's, you know, getting to meet editors, getting to know them, sending in your work, saying like, you know, here's my latest comic. If you ever have anything that, you know, I'd love to work with you on something, you know, if you ever have anything you have a need for, please let me know. And you basically like, that's basically what I did for years and years and years. And, you know, most of the time never hearing back or getting a very polite no. Mm-hmm. And still like, you know, it was like, used to be 99% of the time I would hear nothing or get a very polite no. Now it's like 95% of the time. You know what I mean? It's
a right trajectory.
It's a trajectory, you know, but it's like, I haven't done a lot, but I've gotten to write a Superman story, a Spider-Man story, you know, mm-hmm. Ghost Rider. And like, it's fun, you know, and like, you know, I would love, again, like I would love to sort of get the opportunity to really like get some of these characters for like a good chunk of time and be able to like really put my own spin on it or, you know, and like, you know, tell a really cool story with them. But, you know, at the end of the day, that's something that's not really in my control. So mm-hmm. I can't really, bet the farm on that. You know what I mean? It's like honestly, like, I think maybe at this point I've done like 10 or 12 licensed stories. We're talking like Marvel, DC. I did some like stuff for Turtle, Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, Magic the Gathering, like all my licensed stuff or whatever. Mm-hmm. Like I think there was maybe like one of them, maybe two, where I asked and got the job. You know what I mean? Where I was like, hey,
right.
I have an idea for Superman. And the editor was like, what is it? and like, okay, like I like it. Let's do it. every other one was just sort of like me opening up my inbox one random afternoon, mm-hmm. an editor saying, hey, like, do you have time or are you interested in working on this? And me being like, yeah, absolutely. Mm-hmm. But, you know, like, there's no way of knowing whether like there's no like magic number of times that I reached out to them or no, like, you know, like wasn't like, okay, well, this is Rich's 15th email to me. I'm finally going to write him back.
The secret is, and I'm going to give it all out here. This is the comic book secret. Since they don't let you in the offices anymore at Marvel, editors get punch cards printed out with the names of all the people who want to work there. And every time they get some sort of like email or submission, they pull out the old clicker and chunk out comes a little, comic book shaped Chad. And when they finally pull your name out and it's full, they go, well, hey, you're in luck.
Right. But, you know, so what I'm saying is it's like, yeah, I want to do all that stuff, but like, it may happen. It may never happen. Yep. And there's nothing I can do about it either way. So the only thing I really have control over is my own stories. And honestly, like, I don't even have control over whether an idea I have, you know, whether it gets published with IDW or gets published with Image or mm-hmm. gets published with Boom. It's like, you know, like, I have to submit those stories. I have to pitch them. And if everybody turns it, you know, if every publisher turns it down, then I have to make the decision, like, am I going to put it in a drawer or am I going to try to do it on myself? Like, maybe through crowdfunding or whatever it is, you know what I mean? But it's like really like the only part of the process I have any control over is the work I put into it. So that's what I have to focus on, or at least what I try to keep in mind, like, you know, like, that's what I can do. It's like, what can I do? I can write.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah. And you can, you know, and there's nothing, no bad comes from generating your own thing and putting it out there in the world. Mm-hmm. Like, that is far more effective in the long run than, mm-hmm. you know, chasing, you know, a slot with Marvel or DC, which is fine. Yeah. And there's nothing, you know, that there's great enjoyment and entertainment and working with those products. And, but.
Oh yeah. You know. No, it's not like I don't chase them. I do chase them. Sure. Like, you know, like I sent out emails today, like just checking in with like, you know, some DC editors that I know, just being like, hey, like, just so you know, I'm available if you have anything. Mm-hmm. But I think like the difference between when I was starting out was, I think, like, I just sort of like in the beginning, it would get like really kind of like frustrating to me when I would send those emails out and not hear back or be hearing like no or things like that. Whereas now I just don't really expect anything from it. It's just sort of like, I'm doing this just to let them know that I'm available. And if they need me, they probably don't need me, but you never know.
It's like, so, it's like clearing out some sort of like, I don't know, like overflow valve, you know, like just in case there's a bit of a flood, you don't want the basement, you know, flooding up. And if you don't fill, you know, clean this thing out every so often and the flood happens, you're going to have a basement full of, you know, mess. And this is the way to, like, you have to do these certain things if you want to do that thing. Like, there's no way around it. Or you can just create your own stuff and have a great life in that way. And it doesn't matter. So what's the, what horror books you're working on this year? I'm just joking. It's like you've sort of like moved yourself into the horror ranks, you know, of creators, which is, you know, there's a very intense fan base for those types of books.
Yeah. It's kind of funny because I don't really have any horror books like coming out in the near term. Like the stuff I'm working on right now is mostly science fiction and fantasy, but I do have a book coming out on May 15th called Heart Piercer.
Okay.
That's it's fantasy, but it's very kind of like I would call it like a like dark and gothic fantasy, like a lot more like of like a Van Helsing kind of like thing, more mm-hmm. than like a, you know, Lord of the Rings type of thing. Basically it's takes place in a world that's been overrun by like your kind of like classic creatures of the night, like werewolves and vampires and but also like other mythical creatures like giant spiders and dragons and stuff. But it's about a this huntress who basically before the world fell thought she was protecting it by slaying all these like mythical creatures, things like unicorns and all these like totemic creatures. And she thought she was like, she was sort of told that she was like protecting humanity from it, but found out that when the job was done, what she was really doing was basically she killed all of the things that were holding all of these worst things back. Mm-hmm. And they kind of come swarming, taking over the world. And so that's got like some horror tinged elements to it, but it's definitely like more of like a fantasy story.
Cool.
But yeah, so that's cool. I've got a book called A Phone Call Away coming out in August. That's more of like a true crime style book. Like it's not a true crime, but it's definitely that like a crime genre.
Mm-hmm.
Without any kind of like supernatural elements to it, which is pretty new for me too. But
that's cool.
But I did enjoy writing it a lot. And then I have a on May 1st I got tapped to write the Mechagodzilla 50th anniversary special. So if you're a wow. Godzilla fan, it's a fun book. It's like a 40-page like special.
That's really cool.
Yeah. And then I have a few other things coming out like towards the end of the year that haven't been announced and I'm not allowed to talk about yet.
But, all right.
They should be fun.
That's cool. Are you doing any conventions this year?
Yeah, I'll definitely be doing New York Comic Con because that's local to me. Yeah. And I'll probably be doing San Diego as well.
Okay.
In the summer. I was going to try to make it out to Chicago this year, but I wasn't able to line things up.
Yeah.
But
they're a huge investment of time and energy.
Yeah, they are. Yeah. There are a couple of like local ones in Jersey that I do. But nothing like huge.
Yeah.
But
right on. Well, Rich, thank you. It's great talking to you. What I call the first of a new breed of guests where a fan says on, you know, social media, hey, interview this person. And that you were the first person. And I was like, my gosh, that person broke the system. They figured it out. Like, okay. Right. So like, I can't be like a complete jerk and be like, no. So I was like, all right, well, right. That works, you know? So A plus to who, I've forgotten the person's name, but I will find their message and I will let them know it's coming out. But,
yeah.
Thank you for sharing your time.
Yeah. Thank you for having me. I had a great time.